Analysis suggests that different medicines for different racial groups will soon be available in Britain. First, as part of Radio 4's Quran and Country season, Nasreen Suleiman investigates the life of Muhammad Siddiq Khan, the eldest of the July 7th suicide bombers.
How did a British-born, university-educated learning mentor from Leeds become a suicide bomber?
I still find it impossible to believe that he would explode a bomb on a train when there would be the possibility of a child being on that train.
Your democratically elected governments continuously perpetuate atrocities against my people all over the world.
I couldn't believe it, to be honest. My dad phoned me up and he says, "Oh, that lad that you said were all right." He says, "Have you seen that bloody video?" And even watching it didn't change my opinion about him. He was totally different.
Until we feel security, you will be our targets.
And I remember going up to him and saying, "Hello, welcome back. How was your Mecca?" And he barely spoke to me. He had completely changed personality.
We are at war and I'm a soldier.
Before he became a self-appointed soldier, Muhammad Siddiq Khan was a respected and popular professional. But on the 7th of July, he blew himself up on the tube at Edgware Road, killing himself and six other people. He was the oldest and the probable leader of the four bombers. Like me, Siddiq Khan was born to Muslim parents, who originally came to Yorkshire from Pakistan. For the last few months, I've spent most of my time in Leeds and Dewsbury, trying to piece together the bomber's life, and find out what turned a northern lad into a suicide bomber. I've spoken to people who knew Siddiq at every stage of his life, from his school days onwards. Several of them have never spoken publicly before, and I've discovered that Khan's radicalism certainly wasn't the result of childhood religious indoctrination, radical mosques, or a lack of integration into mainstream British society. Khalid is the closest person to Khan in his last years, who was prepared to talk to me. It's not his real name, and we've disguised his voice as he risks being ostracised by the Muslim community for breaking his silence.
He heard that he was going overseas to carry out jihad or whatever type of military training.
When did you hear this?
I used to hear it every now and then. Sometimes you would hear a rumour through the community, or sometimes it was through another person. A sound source who would say that this person has said that he's gone overseas to carry out training, and I would say I heard it frequently.
Muhammad Siddiq Khan was born to Tikkir Khan and his wife Mameeda Begum in October 1974 at St James's Hospital in Leeds. Tikkir Khan was a foundry worker and one of the first Pakistanis to settle in Yorkshire. The family moved to Beeston after Khan was born. The young Khan's upbringing was emphatically not a segregated one. He attended Hugh Gateskill Middle School, which was not only outside his local catchment area, but had fewer Asians than the Cross Flat School on his doorstep. I've managed to trace some of his school friends who talked about him for the first time. Ian Barrett was at Hugh Gateskill with Khan.
He found out he was a bit of a laugh, because he was quite cheeky. So he just bounced off each other, it was good, because he had the same kind of sense of humour as I did.
What kind of sense of humour did he have at that age?
It was just, you'd pick up on little things that teachers said and just make wisecracks about it. He used to have a class together with one certain teacher, and both of us knew if we got them talking about one subject, some of that they were passionate about, and they'd just reel off and that was it, and we just had to sit there so we didn't actually do his lesson.
Sadiq's sense of mischief and humour helped endear him to his school friends. In their view, he was the most English of Pakistanis, and his nickname of Sid suited him for those reasons. When Ian Barrett, who still lives in Leeds, heard the news reports about Muhammad Siddiq Khan and his suicide attack, it didn't register that it was Sid from school, until a friend rang him.
He goes, "Have you seen paper? Do you know who Muhammad Siddiq Khan is?" There's no. There's, it's Sid. And then a couple of weeks later, that suicide video came out, and it was him. And I was like, blown away.
So what was your reaction when you discovered it was your mate Sid?
Just shocked, because that's just not the Sid that I went to school with. That suicide video, he wanted his natural speaking rhythm. He used to be quick. You say something to him, he's got something witty to say back to you. You can't outdo him with sarcasm. It was a bouncing talk. He was fast. He was funny with it. That wasn't him on that video.
It was Ian's friend Rob Cardis who broke the news to him. Rob met Sid later at Matthew Murray High School, which had far more Pakistani pupils than his middle school. But according to Rob Cardis, it didn't make much difference to Sadiq.
He seemed to have more white friends than he did Asian friends. He didn't hang around in groups of Asian lads, but he used to hang around in groups of white lads playing football and stuff. I'd say his voice at school was very, very soft but very well spoken, very, very English. A lot better English than me. No accent as such, it was just a good English.
Can you describe how he came across in those days?
We used to do debates on different things, and you used to get the guys that were talking about how people are trying to rule the world and there's people suffering in these countries and stuff like that.
And are they talking about Muslim suffering?
They talk about Muslim suffering a lot, yeah. Whereas we see he never sort of knew which religion he were in, because he wouldn't come in and sort of say, oh, yeah, I'm fasting, you know, whereas the other guys would make a big deal about it, you know, so he never really knew. I wouldn't have said really I knew which religion he were following.
Ian Barrett, who'd known him since middle school, also remembers this lack of interest in Islam.
I can't remember him mentioning religion once. Never an issue. People used to say to him that he never used to go to mosque and stuff because he wasn't interested. I don't think his family were interested. Because some people, like, used to knock around with lads who were terrors. They used to knock about with us. But when the mosque man come round, that was it. Good as gold. And they would have to go to mosque, or their family would say, you go in a mosque, and that's it, you go in. But he wouldn't. And he just used to bum around, watch TV, and watch films, just knock about.
Sadiq's lack of religious education is pretty untypical of British Muslims of the time. Many, like myself, were sent off to the local mosque to learn the Quran by rote. And Khan was untypical in another way, according to his school friends. There was plenty of racial tension at Matthew Murray High School in the 1980s. The slightest thing could spark a race fight. Even the uncles of the Asian pupils would often turn up at the school and join in. But Khan kept out of it.
With Sadiq, I can't remember one instance where there were anything where they were involved in it. It never seemed to be like part of the group of the guys that all fight and all get together as such.
Even the quietest Pakistani lads, who you never had any bother with, would click into that group because your safety in numbers. Then he just didn't ever get involved in that.
So he never took sides with either you, the English lads, or the Pakistani lads?
No, didn't want to get involved at all.
It was a real surprise to discover how anglicised Khan was at school. But Ian Barrett remembers something even more unexpected. Sadiq Khan once wanted to be an American and apparently spent several months in the US while he was still at school.
When he come back, it was quite funny because he was wearing cowboy boots and this leather jacket, what just didn't suit him. He just got pilloried by Pakistani lads. It was like, he just looks a div and all that. But he loved it.
And what did he have to say about America when he came back?
He just loved it. It was fantastic. He was going to go do all his exams, pass his courses, go live there.
Why did he rate it so highly?
Don't know, just everything about it was fantastic, he said. The food, the people, everything. He just loved it. So I'm going to be really loving the West to going to become a suicide bomber against the West. It's just a total reversal in his outlook.
Khan wasn't a specially high achiever at school, but not many of his classmates at Matthew Murray were. Apart from Jason Robinson, England's first black rugby captain, and a few people who went to Oxbridge, the school generally produced people who achieved moderate success in life. I haven't been able to find out what Khan did for the first 3 years after he left school. He must have soon realised that his ambition to emigrate to America wasn't going to happen. Eventually, he took a job closer to home at the Inland Revenue Office. His old friend Ian Barrett bumped into him in 1996.
You were on bus. And he said he was working for Inland Revenue. So I was like, I thought you were going to go to America. And he says, yeah. Couldn't get a visa or something or whatever. And I says, what are you doing for Inland Revenue? And he just says, oh, I'm doing audits on companies. I says, is it good? It's a bit boring, but it's a good wage. And I says, all right, fair enough.
Their meeting left Ian under the impression that Sadiq was already a graduate. But he wasn't. And when he told Ian that his current job involved auditing company books, he was exaggerating. He was a clerical officer at the lowest grade. Filing was one of his main tasks. It couldn't have been a very happy time for Sadiq as he left shortly afterwards, without giving any reasons and having lasted only 5 weeks. It's been hard to piece together Khan's educational and professional background, but I've established that in the autumn of that year, at the age of 21, Khan attended his local college, Park Lane, and enrolled for an HND in business and marketing. He also got his first part-time job as a youth worker with Leeds City Council. Here, he started to encounter the many Muslims he'd managed to avoid at school. Afzal Chowdhury worked alongside him in his new role as a youth worker.
The young people he worked with lived around him, and so it was just by helping them, I feel, he was helping himself and his local community. What I noticed was that he often joined in the activities such as weight training and martial arts or keep fit, etc.
How would you describe his personality?
Sadiq was always known to have a good sense of humour, but he was very assertive as well and tried to do things professionally. To me, he just seemed like a normal, nice chap.
Khan completed his HND and 2 years later he went to Leeds Metropolitan University, where he did a one-year course that converted his diploma into a business management degree. He got a 2-2 and was now a graduate. It was whilst at university that he met his future wife. Hasina Patel from Dewsbury was already at Leeds Metropolitan when she met Khan. Theirs was a love marriage. Normally, men like Sadiq would marry someone chosen by his parents, and that wife would undoubtedly be of Pakistani origin. Hasina was from an Indian Gujarati background, and within the Muslim community, her parents were regarded as being higher up the social scale than Sadiq's family. So once again, Khan went against the grain. But as he settled into his career and the idea of marriage, Islam was for the first time becoming important to him. He was becoming a revert, a Muslim who returns to the practice of their faith. In 2001, Afzal Chowdhury employed him as a field worker for a report that looked at the problem of drugs in the Eastern South Asian community. It had been several years since the two men had last met, and Afzal noticed a change in Khan.
I can recall that he had become a person frequenting the mosque a lot more than before.
Did you ever discuss religion or politics with him?
No, not really, no. Because he was only just beginning to practice his religion. I don't think he was really that much into it. So we never had those discussions.
Around this time, Khan also became a volunteer at Beeston's Islamic bookshop, Iqra. In 2001, while still working part-time on the drugs project, he got a full-time job as a learning mentor at Hillside Primary School. For 6 months, he juggled both jobs and became known as an enthusiastic and committed individual who wanted to do his best to help care for the most vulnerable people in society, whether they were disruptive pupils or drug users. At Hillside, Khan always went to work in Western clothes and was popular with the parents. Jane, not her real name, was a mother who had frequent dealings with Khan.
It wasn't particularly funny, he wasn't handsome, he wasn't particularly clever. But on the other hand, he was quite normal. He always tried to get things done nicely, never shouted and screamed. Some of the teachers do shout and scream, I'm sure you've met some. He was just a genuinely nice bloke.
And how was Mr. Khan, as he was, regarded by the other parents?
Actually, everybody liked him. Everybody liked him. Nobody had a bad word to say about him. Really nice bloke.
His work with James Child and others would lead to some national recognition when a profile of the school was published in 2002 in the Times Educational Supplement. The journalist who interviewed him for the article saw Khan as a political animal, certainly left-wing, and exasperated with what he saw as the failures in the education system. But there was no hint of an anti-Western ideology. But in fact, Khan's radicalisation had already begun. He joined a group of young Muslim men who went paintballing. It sounds innocuous enough, but those who've done paintballing say it can be a bit like guerrilla warfare. The participants divide into teams, often wear camouflage gear, and shoot pellets which contain paint at members of the opposing team. The supposed battleground is usually woodland. Khalid, whose voice we have disguised, told me how he came to join the same group.
I used to know a few of his other friends, and from there I asked other people, and then, you know, that's how the social network developed.
Was that something that Sadiq Khan himself organised, or was it organised by others and he was part of that group?
Organised by others and he was part of that group.
And how many of you used to go, and what kind of age range was there?
About 15 to 20 of us. And Enid was generally the youth, teenagers, you would say.
Did you ever see Sadiq Khan interact with the other three men, Jamal, Haseeb?
With Jamal, certainly, because Jamal was the other guy that I saw on the paintball activities.
And how did he strike you?
Again, just a quiet person who kept himself to himself, and he used to ask every now and then, how are you, etc., etc., but just in an acquaintance form.
Jamal Lindsay, also known as Jermaine, was responsible for the attack on King's Cross. Khalid's account of these gatherings is the first evidence we have of how Khan and Jamal met. Jamal had only recently converted to Islam when Khan and he were first introduced. It was through loose social networks, spanning Leeds, Dewsbury and Huddersfield, that they would begin to establish a relationship. Paintballing was preceded by meetings in people's homes, where the aim was the raising of Islamist political awareness.
Before we would leave the house, sometimes, not all the time, there used to be a video or, you know, reflecting what's happening in Palestine, or reflecting what's happening in Chechnya, or other places around the world where Muslims were affected.
Why was that? Why was it?
I don't know. I think it was just trying to raise an interest or raise an awareness. It's just looking back on it now, I do find it a bit weird that we had such a viewing of such material taking place.
Was it Sadiq Khan who used to introduce it and show these videos?
No, it was somebody else.
You said that retrospectively it strikes you as odd.
Well, looking back on it, I mean, I can see why some youth would be affected by this. I mean, they see a video, they get emotional, they get fired up, or they get stirred up. And I think having that video shown might not have been the best interest of certain people at heart.
I mean, how was it introduced in the room? What was said before the video was shown?
Nothing was said. It was just said, this is what's happening in Palestine, or this is what's happening in a certain part of the country, etc., etc. No views were given that we're looking for recruiters or volunteers or funds or gifts, etc. Nothing like that whatsoever.
Do you remember what kind of images you were showed in those videos? I mean, can you describe them?
I would say just standard images, like say for example, people being mutilated, people being shot, people being oppressed, people at checkpoints for hours upon end, you know, people crying and people upset, etc.
Do you ever remember sort of registering what Sadiq Khan's reaction was when you were in that room watching these videos prior to going paintballing?
People were just concerned that this was happening, that's all. And slightly somber mood after that. But once the paintballing started, I think people sort of forgot about it and went the wrong way.
The violent and graphic images that Khalid describes may not have been the only videos Khan was exposed to. Other tapes did the rounds in Beeston, and I've obtained a copy of one which Khan might have seen. It's called Shadows in Motion.
The Prophet Muhammad said that a time would come when the whole world would gather around to plan the destruction of the Muslims.
It has a portentous current affairs like voiceover, but it's purveying a paranoid message.
People will believe a liar and disbelieve one who is trustworthy.
The internet and the circulation of videos are common tools in promoting hardline attitudes amongst Muslims. Khan had begun to experience this hinterland, but adept as he was at keeping up appearances, he never aroused suspicion, even when he started to disappear from work for long periods of time, as Jane remembers.
I remember saying to one of the other parents, oh, I haven't seen Mr. Khan for weeks, where is he? And the reply I got was, he's gone away to Mecca. I said, all right, when's he due back? Oh, he's due back 2 weeks ago. And I think he'd gone, by the time he came back he'd been gone 3 months, I am sure of that. Because I remember thinking, wow, it's a long time since I've seen him. He's been gone for ages.
But did Sadiq really go on Hajj, or was it a cover for military training? I rang some companies that specialise in organising these pilgrimages. I eventually spoke to Yusuf, and he confirmed to me that Khan and his wife Hasina had gone for Hajj in 2003. Yusuf led the group that left for Mecca in January and spent time with Sadiq.
He was a very calm and collected person. He was a very quiet person.
Did he talk about the importance of Islam to him at all?
There was no mention to him particularly, But I will say this, that every other day we hold a seminar in Makkah, and he was there day after day, meaning every day, and his wife was attending.
And how did she strike you as a person, do you remember?
Very quiet. She was very quiet because she was asking the questions to me directly sometimes, but then she was directing the questions towards him for him to ask me. I remember that.
And in a kind of sort of tradition of a Muslim wife?
It is a tradition where the females, when they are bonded into the marital understanding, the love and the respect, then it becomes that the male is the actual dominant part of that family.
When he came back, he was a different man. And he had completely changed personality. And I remember going up to him and saying, "Hello, welcome back, how was your Mecca?" And he barely spoke to me. Barely passed another half dozen words to me after that. Didn't particularly make eye contact with anybody that I noticed, certainly not with me. And he called my son by that nasty nickname. I think it was nasty anyway. So I asked him twice to stop. Second time he did. But with very bad grace. "Yeah, okay, I'll stop," kind of thing. But not, "Oh, I'm sorry if that offended you."
Have you discussed it with other parents?
We did discuss it at the time, yes, because he was also different with all the other parents in my clique. He was different with them. He was shorter with them. You had to go track him down if you wanted to speak to him, whereas before he'd be out in the playground. He was still out in the playground, but he was trying to avoid us.
Khan returned to the UK with the Hajj group in February. But taking time off was becoming a habit. Amongst his circle of friends, other, more dramatic news about Khan was being discussed. They were told that his trips abroad were now more than just for religious pilgrimages.
I certainly heard that he was going to Pakistan and then, I guess, from Pakistan to Afghanistan and then carrying out training that certainly wasn't paintball activity. It was certainly more on the military discipline side.
Do you remember when the first time you heard this suggestion, that he was going overseas?
A good couple of years back, I think 3 to 4 years back. But sometimes when somebody says something like this, you just dismiss their views. They're just saying this thing because just to boast. But then, obviously, after what has happened, then it kind of puts the pitch into perspective, you'd say.
Why do you think he was bragging about it? I mean, you have a point there. If you are doing something like that, you presumably do want to conceal it.
Maybe they were looking for the people, maybe they were looking for sympathisers, or maybe they were just out there to have a conversation and they felt perfectly natural to talk about this issue in the open.
Khan had also come to the attention of the police, but he was thought unimportant and not worth monitoring. He also became a father in May 2004. That autumn, Afzal Chowdhury met him again when they both prayed at the same mosque during the month of Ramadan. By now, there was a clear change in him.
I did feel the one or two times I did see him in the last year, I felt estranged from him to a certain extent. I wasn't sure why that was. Possibly it could have been that because I'm a Salafi and I'm a Muslim who follows Orthodox Islam and people are aware we're against of this type of ideology, then if indeed he was upon this extreme way, then that could be a possibility.
How did this estrangement manifest itself? Did he ignore you or did he refuse to greet you? How did it show itself?
But just when you do see someone after a long time and you know you've had association with them for a number of years in the past, working together or something, obviously it's normal to greet them. But you know, there was always an excuse, there was somebody else in between us or it was time for prayer or something. But I just felt at the time, not afterwards, I actually felt at the time quite estranged from him. And I felt it was quite peculiar. And in hindsight, obviously, it does make one think.
A few weeks later, Khan visited Pakistan. Together with another of the 7th of July bombers, Shahzad Tanweer, he was photographed arriving at Karachi Airport. He stayed in Pakistan until February this year. And in December, he finally resigned from his job at Hillside Primary. Soon after his return, Hasina became pregnant again. But sources close to the family say she's miscarried since the bombings. We don't know exactly when or where Khan and his fellow bombers hatched their plan to attack the tube. But it must have been very well advanced in June 2005, when Khan went shopping at the White Rose Shopping Centre near Leeds and bumped into his old school friend Rob Cardis.
I was coming out of Debenhams, and as we were just walking, he sort of like, hey, up, and he just raised his hand, and I walked over, and then we shook hands, and it's like, how are you doing? And I can remember saying to him that I were having a christening coming up, and it started a conversation with us then about kids, basically. And I was just talking to him about the fact he said the similar kind of thing. No one teaches you how to change nappies, no one prepares you for being a parent, that your priorities change on everything you do. And he was asking if I'd seen any lads from school. He asked about Phil Mars and Damien Gilmore, another lad, and if I knew what they were up to. That was pretty much it. So.
And did you sense anything odd at all?
Nothing odd. He was, when we were talking, he was eye contact all the time. He was just talking away. There were no. In my mind, I'll never be able to understand why people would do something like that. But I mean, if it were me and I knew that in 4 weeks' time, I'd try not to get into a conversation with someone. I'd be away, and so I said, "Oh, all right," and you'd be off, which would have been quite easy for him to do. But he actually stopped and made time for us. We shook hands and just talking.
This story of Carl's apparent normality and willingness to talk to someone he hadn't seen for 3 years is astonishing, when he was so close to carrying out his act of terrorism. And he must also have been preparing or have recorded his notorious suicide video, from which new excerpts have appeared this week. They don't shed any new light on his personality, but they do reveal the depth of his alienation from traditional Islam in Britain. He is contemptuous of those he refers to as so-called Islamic scholars, with their Toyotas and their semi-detached houses. And he goes on to say, they need to stay at home, they're useless, and leave the job to the real men, the true inheritors of the Prophet. Those in his closest circle must have had some inkling of the intensity of his hatred towards the country in which he grew up. However, these radical views were common enough that people close to him weren't particularly concerned, and Khaled preferred to concentrate on his nicer side.
I just took the good side of his, that was asking about the family and being a caring person. I just took those views on board and I dismissed the other views. I thought, oh, don't say anything, just leave him as it is.
Khaled never imagined that Khan would actually become a terrorist, and most radicalised young Muslims don't. We'll probably never know exactly why Muhammad Sadiq Khan was different. But whilst his trips to Pakistan and Afghanistan may have helped Khan prepare for the atrocities of July the 7th, it was in West Yorkshire that he was exposed to the influence and the ideas which turned him into a terrorist. To become a radical Islamist and someone who hated the West, Muhammad Sadiq Khan never needed to go abroad. He didn't need a radical imam or a separatist education, because he had neither. Some videos, a group of like-minded friends, and a spare front room in someone's house was probably all it took.
Quran and Country, Biography of a Bomber, was presented by Nasreen Suleiman. The producer was Innes Barron. Well, the American government has just licensed the first ever racially specific medicine. In a moment, analysis asks whether it will help disadvantaged groups or create an apartheid health system. And that's after news of next week's Quran and Country.
We thought that we should set up our own organizations where we could educate our children morally and academically. The whole ethos is Islamic.
BBC Radio 4 gains exclusive access to a privately run Muslim school.
My name is Zainab, and we prayed the morning prayers and the recitation in Arabic and then the translation in English.
And we're not allowed any Walkmans or anything like that, because they check your bag.